Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 27 of the Egon Carlos Tennis Show. Joining me here, as always, is Damien. I'm Vanch. You guys know us pretty well by now, almost approaching 1 year of doing this. So we have a lot to talk about today. Stuttgart just finished yesterday. We have Madrid starting, some Alcaraz updates, Swiatek, not able to defend the title in Stuttgart. But let's start with that, Damien. Firstly, how are you doing? And also, what did you think of Iga's week?
I'm doing fine, of course. When it comes to Stuttgart, yeah, it was a fun storyline that she's never lost there, that she's the two-time defending champion. But I think we talked about this before, that like there was always some potential for a powerful hitter to just win against her there, because the courts are slick, the courts are faster than clay court, like sort of the clay court that we know from Rome or Paris. I think that Lyudmila Samsonova obviously came super close in 2022. That was probably the best match on Iga's 37 win streak, the best match that anyone gave her then. There was Karolina Plíšková just peaking for a set in 2023. Then, of course, it ended very quickly. But, it's still, I also don't want to paint it as like, that was the first player like this that Iga faced, because obviously she won against Aryna Sabalenka twice in two finals in a row in 2022 and 2023. So clearly, it's not like she's going to lose to a player like this every single time or come close to losing. But if that sort of player stylistically is also one of the best two players in the world right now, that screams a bit of trouble. Of course, currently the head-to-head against Rybakina and for Rybakina and Świątek this series is going to be at 1-1, and it is pretty fitting that Iga actually won the Doha match but lost Stuttgart in terms of the conditions. But probably during the whole week, I don't think Iga ever really played her best tennis. I mean, Mertens, Raducanu, these were some battles, actually. Like, both players forced her to work. Of course, especially with Raducanu, that was a big storyline. And, like, yeah, just the fact that Emma was able to come relatively close, probably not really playing the tennis that, like, suits her the most, because she was forced to work so hard on the defense because of that weight of shot that Iga brings. But still able to keep up with her for so long, 70 minutes opening set. And then Rybakina, I just never thought that these first two matches would matter, because it's such a different matchup. And in fact, I don't think they did. I have to say, my enjoyment of the semifinal was like a little up and down, because it was just so serve-based, so, of course, return as well based in this at the same time. And every single rally felt like it was ending in three or five shots. But, that's something that Rybakina deserves a lot of credit for too. Definitely, like, the biggest difference maker was the fact that Rybakina, when in the second set she dropped her percentages on first serve, then Iga was, of course, able to attack a lot more, was able to get the first strike in on return, and just kept pushing for that break until she eventually found it. That all changed again in the third set. But all in all, like, especially the flat backhands cross court that Rybakina was sending at her, like, that really was so tough to handle. And in the end, she loses Stuttgart. Of course, that's not the biggest thing in the world. As we've said many times, Stuttgart, even Madrid, they don't really have that much in common with Roland Garros in terms of how it plays. Kind of as we were talking about in Doha, when Świątek beat Rybakina, when she maintained that status of the woman to beat on slow, spin-friendly hard courts, on a faster clay court, she kind of didn't. But, it's not the end of the world. And Rybakina just shows that, well, she's just as serious as Świątek this year. She is now just 140 something points away from her in the race. Three titles to Świątek's two, but I think we can kind of count United Cup as a title for Iga too. Because, I mean, you win five singles matches, right? So it's kind of like a title. And obviously they have the same win-loss record too, kind of the same one stain as well on their. On what they've achieved so far this year, which is going out early at the Australian Open.
Yeah, that was a good tweet that you put out on the account. The 26-4 records for both of them, and just such little gaps separated them. And I totally agree with everything you said about the match and also Iga's week as a whole. I never thought she found her best level. And then also the first set against Raducanu was some high quality stuff, at least also from Emma, and she was really forced to win it in the end. In the Rybakina match, you also mentioned the first serve percentage, which definitely like 66% for the first set, 49 in the second, and 66 again in the third. And also you have this crazy number of breakpoints that both of them saved. You got 1 point saved, like 8 breakpoints in the start of the third set, and was having to be really clutch on all of them. But what did you think was like the biggest thing that potentially held Iga back? Because I saw a lot of people saying, and to a certain extent, the stats bear it out as well. The 13 out of 15 breakpoints saved for Rybakina. Is there an adjustment you would have liked to seen from Iga made on the return, potentially moving back on the return, getting more height over it, and like more loopier shots to force longer rallies and rely on her athleticism? Because I mean, that is probably an adjustment she will have to make at some point if Rybakina keeps serving, which like this, which she always pretty much does regardless of the surface.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the Stuttgart court, the impact of serve was also definitely, higher than usual, which is not good for Riga in this matchup, obviously, since if we're talking about both of them having a strong serve return game, like for Elena, it's kind of like more even about the first part. For Riga, it's obviously about the second component. And on the first serve, she was like always just struggling for it, right? I mean, she was barely in the point, and most of the time, even if she got the return back in play, it was tough to stay in it. But I think on second, she was definitely doing fine with what she was going for. Maybe there were some occasions where, like, she gets to 40 love and does that by hitting like massive second serve returns, and then suddenly on breakpoint it doesn't work out. But if that's what got you to 40 love, if that's what, well, maybe not 40 love, but like to 40 15 a couple of times, if that's what got you there, then you should keep going for it. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think she absolutely played a fine match. I thought at first in the second set, I remember that, oh, so Iga had like started being even more aggressive on return here, and usually that's like maybe not the best idea for her when she plays one of these like super powerful flat hitters. But it was working out fine. But then when I connected it with the stats and just saw that, okay, so Rybakina is landing just half of her first serve base her first serves basically, that kind of connected the dots. But all in all, yeah, I don't think she was just really able to do much against Elena, and how quickly she took over points, especially with her serve, but also, of course, anytime she found a big return, anytime she found like a middle of the court backhand to crack on. Maybe there was not that much like trying to move Rybakina, stretching her around, but at the same time, I don't know if this court or the conditions really allowed for it in that much, for the most part. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a definitely a fine loss to take. We'll see if she can come up with something very different if they face on slow clay. It definitely adds some intrigue to the rest of the clay season now, because if she beats, it's kind of like last year, like when we were thinking, okay, so if she's beating Sabalenka here, of course, then she lost to her Madrid as well. But like, if she's beating Sabalenka here, she's probably gonna beat her at Roland Garros. She's probably gonna beat her at Rome. I still think that she would be the favorite of Rybakina if they face in such conditions, but it does add some intrigue, and we have to remember that the Doha match was not that lopsided either.
Yeah, all good points. I mean, you mentioned also the like getting to breakpoint, playing that kind of aggressive style. It makes sense that you would want to do that again, and hope that it works out on a big point, especially if that's what you're most comfortable in. That is the return that Swiatek is most comfortable with. Also, the other thing is if you drop back, you're risking it being too safe and perhaps landing short, and then you're giving Rybakina a ton of time either, which you don't want to do. So it's a very tricky balance, actually. And it's kind of easy to just be like, oh, you should completely change it up and do something different when you're still getting really close. And there's two, the reality is these are two very evenly matched players right now in terms of like I said, the season and the level that they're bringing right now. It's definitely the best two since the Australian Open for sure. We can say these are the two best players on the WTA. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting next time they play, especially if they play in Rome and Roland Garros. I would still favor Iga to win that match. I mean, she was winning it last year as well in Rome. So yeah, it's gonna be kind of interesting, and then we'll see what level Sabalenka can really bring, and especially in Madrid, where it's interesting she's either like lost first round or won the title. So And we could potentially have a rematch, I guess, in the final of Madrid, with either Ego or Arena for Ego. Because I think, I saw the draw, and I just basically, I'm not looking at every round, like who's playing who, but it just general, like who's in what half. And so I saw that, Ego and Arena are in opposite halves, and Elena's in Arena's half. So I guess Goff is the potential semi for Ego, but yeah. I mean, it would be kind of like a bonus if she won Madrid, right? Because it is one of the few 1000s that she hasn't got yet.
Yeah, I mean, she's only played it like twice, right? 2023, of course, the final. It was a pretty easy campaign, like other than the Alexandrova win, but also she served for the match. So she was actually moving through the draw pretty convincingly. We'll see if that happens again. But obviously, the final against Sabalenka was one of the best matches of the year last year. And in 2021, she lost to Barty, which at the time was also a very fine result. Definitely. And Barty was very strong in Madrid. And yeah, I don't know if it would feel like a bonus. Like, she definitely is one of the main contenders. Is she the main favorite for the title? Probably still. Not only because like we always say that like she is just more consistent than her peers, and like that's why statistically she's usually the main favorite. But I don't think that's really, that's what's happening here. I mean, basically, if you don't give her like an Ostapenko Rybakina on a peak day, it's gonna be hard to beat her still. I think, if we're looking at the draw and we have like Wong or Bogdan in the second round, Ala Tsurenko Kirstea in the third round, it would be very surprising if she lost to either of these players. I mean, I know Kirstea has had a Madrid run in the past, I think, but she's played Iga already this year and it was pretty brutal. So yeah, I remember seeing actually a lot on Twitter and like also Polish social media this week about the constant like same draws that Iga gets. For whatever reason, people are suddenly thinking that like the draws are completely fixed. And
All those last
basically,
couple of matches have scarred me.
and they're now praising organizers for switching something up, or actually blaming the organizers for giving her the same draw again, or I thought you guys liked Iga. I don't know. It seems kind of silly to me. Obviously, then people actually use that. Like, if something happens, people use that one example as something has changed, or maybe no, they're still going for it. It's kind of like Pavi G, when Nadal drew Darwin Blanche in Madrid this week, and Pavi G is like screaming on Twitter through 10 different comments that it's just totally sort of totally surprised that unseeded Nadal gets a player who's not in the top 1,000. And yeah, if you do that, you look like Pavi G. That's all I'm gonna tell you.
Too much airtime, man. Too much airtime for Pavi G here. But yeah. Moving on from that. Any other sort of bigger takeaways from Iga? I mean, anything about her serve? Because obviously that is sometimes always been the stroke that's we've been looking at more carefully ever since she switched to the new motion, or trying to make it more fluid. And yeah,
Speeds
still a
were
work in
good.
progress.
The speeds were good. Was it doing like anything special for her? Not really, but well, I again, I don't think the first serve was a liability too much, but probably Rybakina is just going to be an opponent who, of course, attacks like ev almost everyone's second serves. Particularly in this matchup, of course, it was brutal maybe sometimes, but Iga was doing the same to her on her second serves, so. Yeah, she was losing the serve return battle mostly for the first component, but it's not really like she's never going to be Rybakina on serve, right? I do think it could be more effective, but the speeds were okay. Maybe when she was like trying out stuff and going more for the slider for the kick, actually against Rybakina, it wasn't the best thing
Rybakina likes
because
the kicks, because she's so tall and
she was just
she
crack she was
would
just cracking it even easier. Yeah. So I think maybe there were some parts of the match where she got burnt a few times in a row by not trying to like find a flatter, faster first serve. Maybe, but that's a Stuttgart thing. That's maybe a Madrid thing. That's also something that will not be the case the entire clay season. So
Yeah.
I think it was okay, but nothing to write home about, really.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I certainly think also in Rome and Roland Garros, those body serves, especially on those type of clay courts where sometimes you also get some unpredictable bounces, this can be pretty effective in terms of setting up our plus one. Also the extra time that she has on her shot after it. So yeah,
And it was
I
pretty good
mean,
against Emma, actually. Like the kick body serve was really good against Emma.
So yeah, I mean, overall, still like a decent start. Even if I saw a lot of stuff like, oh, 10 match win streak, now that she's lost on clay, like it's sort of like treating the Stuttgart clay as like, a really, really big barometer for Roland Garros. But reality is, it's not really like that. The first half of the clay WTA clay season and second half are just completely different conditions. So that is something weird for the players in terms of also you look at previous Stuttgart winners, right? You usually have there's like a Pliskova or a Kvitova that have won this title before, and they don't generally tend to do that well at Roland Garros. I mean, they both made it semis, so because they're good enough to do that, but like it's very different conditions.
Angelique Kerber won it like 3 times. Laura Siegmund won it. Obviously, The results over the years have never really, well, maybe the last few years we've had Iga and Barty winning it, but as we know, Barty like was also significantly better in like Stuttgart, Madrid than on Parisian clay. Like, she obviously got that slam done in 2019, but everyone was a little surprised that that's the first one she gets. I fully agree with that, and it is weird for the players. Like, I'm not really sure it should work like this, that most top players only get one high quality warm up in the, a sim in similar conditions than to what we have in Paris. Only Rome really, but it is what it is. I mean, you've got the 250s as well, but now the top players can't really play them. So basically, they are really stuck with this. And I remember chatting about this with someone because just kind of randomly, someone asked about the prize money in Stuttgart, and we were just thinking about how low it is, especially compared to like Barcelona. And obviously, that's a topic for another day, like the difference in pay between the tours. But what I was thinking of is just like, so an event like Stuttgart doesn't really need high prize money, because everyone will play it anyway. They can't do anything else that week. And coupled with Billie Jean King Cup, basically the top players have to go to Stuttgart, because otherwise you're not playing for the entire 2 weeks, or like you're playing 2 matches for the entire 2 weeks. Of course, probably that's not the reason why Stuttgart has, prize money that's a lot lower than Barcelona. Like, it's maybe like 200,000 euros or something like that for the winner in Stuttgart, 500 in Barcelona, I think, which is a major contrast. But I was just thinking about, that's kind of what we have on the WTA tour. Like, you're not really spoiled for choice, so that's why an event like Stuttgart gets everyone involved, literally.
Yeah, I mean, we almost got the top four seeds in the semis here, and basically the top players were in it like it usually is. It doesn't feel like a 500. I mean, Marta Kostyuk had to go through what three top 10 players to get to the final. Of course, she was very eager to bring that up herself. And of course, yeah, I mean, Rybakina also, one more thing about her, she's very used to playing these long matches and three setters. And has basically been going three sets most of our matches in, since Miami, except for the final against Collins and then the final here.
There was one match in Miami as well, right? That
And
she
the Madison Keys match, I think, yeah, was straight sets. So,
But
yeah, most of the
I checked
matches.
that, and it's basically just Miami where it started. For some
Yeah.
reason, I thought it's kind of like the whole year by now. But yeah, it's just Miami where it started. But that's actually true. I mean, in the semis, if we were to point out who was fresher the last 3 4 games, definitely Rybakina, and it makes sense. I mean, Świątek never plays 2.5 hours, really.
Yeah. I mean, we had a lot of long matches in Stuttgart, for the conditions being, slick and quick. I mean, we had so many matches go over 3 hours, so many three setters. Just it felt like it was tough to put a lot of players away, especially the players who had really good defense. It was tough to, just, finish points against them even on a court like this. But yeah, and then anything big picture sort of about the Madrid draw? Anything to watch out for in terms of Iga or anyone else?
Yeah, I mean, when I'm looking at the seedings and like sort of who's in Iga's quarter, it's still like it will still. I'm not sure that most of the seedings will hold up. Let's just say that Svitolina has been a bit of a mess, but I guess she also doesn't have like that strong opponent. Her opponents aren't that strong around. Like Azarenka maybe could go far in that section. Sakkari is of course the other top eight seed, which I guess is someone you wanna get as your top eight seed still, despite her recent upswing. So yeah, I mean, for Iga, it just seems like a different road to what she's been having the last few events indeed, in that there's no opponents like, you know, Noshkova, Ostapenko, Aleksandrova, Garcia around. And that usually means that she gets a bit of a safe passage. Like if she starts going through her matches here, somewhat similar to Stuttgart, like against Mertens and Raducanu, then we'll kind of probably start some discussion in regards to her. Yeah, just not hitting that well at the start of the clay swing, but we will have to find out if that happens. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, by the time we reach the semis, of course, I really can't tell yet if someone like Goff will get there or not. Of course, she hasn't been doing that hot, but yeah, generally, like if also like people sometimes freak out that Ostapenko is in her semifinal. I think Yelena recently is clearly showing that like first she needs to get there. She needs to get there, sorry. And basically, I'm not willing to like look into the draw that much because it's clear that this might just simply be too tough at the moment. And yeah, it just doesn't just not make any sense for the most part. She also played that Beijing King Cup match, right, against Switzerland, but which I guess was after we last recorded, but I don't know if there was anything to take from that either. Some people were complaining about the courts, the players as well. So apparently, like Switzerland did, I'm not even sure what, but they made sure basically that the court was a bit of a lottery in terms of the bounces, and even though it was a hard court, it still wasn't like rapid or anything. Like that's not how they attempted that. But obviously, that's something that happens in Beijing King Cup and Davis Cup. And well, the Poles still managed to handle it well. And of course, Iga was like the main actor in it, winning against both Simona Walter and Celine Neff. Well, Victoria Golubic did withdraw before the tie. So actually, that's why they actually, in the end, Switzerland didn't really have that much of a choice in terms of who they were going to play. But without Bencic, they were probably just destined to lose anyway.
The match against Celine Knife was obviously more competitive than the Walter match. That Knife being one of those prospects that to look out for. But there wasn't really that much trouble in terms of both those matches. They both kind of felt inevitable for Iga. But I guess and also she went. She played BGK Cup in 2022 and then played Stuttgart afterwards and kind of is used to doing that now. So we'll see how Madrid goes and whether we're talking about a final weekend when we do the show afterwards. But let's switch over to Alcaraz because this has not been an ideal start for him since Miami, It felt like he was going to be going to clay and playing Monte Carlo for the second time in his career and getting to do the whole Monte Carlo, Barcelona, Madrid swing, but had to pull out of Monte Carlo, was on site practicing, had the arm issues, and basically was able to do everything else besides hit forehands. And then we saw his arm like pretty, heavily taped. He kind of stayed for a long time, tried to give it a go, and then pulled out last minute, and then also traveled to Barcelona and was training there on site and then had to pull out of that. So and I think he was at the draw ceremony today in Madrid, and he's just sort of being very cautious about it, as he should, with Roland Garros coming up. Probably doesn't want to risk anything, but at the same time, he wants to do everything he can to play Madrid, an event that he's won twice, and he has very good feelings at, especially with the conditions. And so hopefully he will be healthy and will be able to play in it. But what are your expectations now that he hasn't played anything on the clay besides the South America?
Hockey plays, I mean, it's definitely technically possible to just play Rome Roland Garros and be fine with it. It's probably just possible to play Roland Garros and look fine there too. Like, obviously, it's not disqualifying you. However, it's better for your confidence, for your rhythm, sure. When it comes to Madrid, I mean, yeah, he's won it twice in a row. It's still an event where, like, someone hitting big early can definitely surprise you. I mean, Emil Ruusuvuori last year, of course, comes to mind. The five break points that Carlos saved in the second set, and one of them with some, like, or at least two of them, actually, with some ridiculous shots, which easily could have just been a second round exit to Emil. And then we have a completely different, like, landscape in terms of his clay season, and there's actually pressure on him in Rome, and maybe the Fabian Marozsán loss ever happens. But yeah, I mean, the
That half
margins, of
volley on break
course.
point that he had,
Yeah, exactly. On
half
half
volley
volley,
was
especially,
ridiculous.
which is just, you don't expect to hit that really, but he manages to do it. He manages to survive. So it was pretty tight, but after that, of course, he was very dominant. Alexander Zverev in the forefront in the final the last 2 years, probably the best player in Madrid in the last 5, 6 years, and Alcaraz just crushes him. So if he plays, if he's ready, my expectations will still be pretty high. I know he hasn't been maybe practicing 100%, but that kind of reminds me of Indian Wells, when until a few days before the event, he was not really. He wasn't ready to even like start 100%, yeah, just giving full effort at practices yet, and then he wins it. I think especially this format with the 2 weeks and sort of the fact that he will start on Saturday, like it gives you quite a lot of leeway. I even said it about like Rudolf Tsitsipas, right? That of course, yeah, they're coming off back-to-back finals, but they're gonna play on Friday or Saturday first, and then they get a day off after the first few matches. Like it really doesn't feel like it will be, such too tremendous effort that they can't keep playing. Like maybe Tsitsipas, of course, with him actually struggling in Barcelona compared to Rune, but with Alcaraz, I mean, at least he's gonna be well rested, that we know. But yeah, I mean, it's a tricky situation for us too, because we are talking about this on Tuesday. The draw is out, but we still have like zero confidence that he will play the event. So hopefully he will. If he does, the draw is exciting, but there's also like a round to really re ease himself into it, I think, with Rinder Nehor Shevchenko. When it comes to potentially then like Musetti, Safiulin, Seibovic, that's pretty tricky, actually. Like you could imagine a big hitter like Seibovic taking him out here. You could imagine Musetti maybe if Alcaraz isn't like 100% ready, swooping in and actually doing damage to him compared to their last two matches. But yeah, I mean, all in all, you would still expect him to be one of the main favorites here, alongside Sinner, really, and sort of, stop there as the two players who have the biggest chance to win the event if they're healthy, if they're ready. With Jannik, I guess he also, like, was in trouble the last match he played, but it didn't seem like any long-term issue. So, well, everyone wants an Alcaraz-Sinner final, and I'm not going to be original, and I'll say that if we indeed get that, that would be kind of the best lead up we can get into Roland Garros.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, hopefully. I mean, this is also Sinner's, but first Masters being in the number one seed after Djokovic withdrew. So, yeah. And I think for him, it was just physical issue during the match or cramps. So, seems like, yeah, I mean, he'll be good to go. For Alcaraz, a bit more of a question mark. And yeah, maybe we'll just see more of the same contenders that we've been seeing so far with Rude and Tsitsipas carrying their form. Or maybe we'll get someone different, like Zdeněk Ostrov did last year.
Karatsev
And maybe
last year, Zhang. That was actually like the tournament of upsets last year, right?
the conditions. I mean, Grigor Dimitrov, this is the only one Masters 1000 where he hasn't made a semi. Maybe
But
he
he
goes on a
had the
run.
biggest win of his career at this event, right? So it's pretty funny to think about.
Yeah, that's true.
Over Djokovic, oof, 11 years ago? I guess 11 years ago.
Yeah, 9 years. So yeah, I mean, we've had quite a lot of people already pull out, right? I mean, we had Djokovic pull out, we had Berrettini pull out, and we have some exciting stuff in the qualies with Team and Kokkinakis playing tomorrow.
Yeah, Bautista Agutra with Vinolas. You've got all these big
Yeah, I mean,
names that
there's just a lot of top players that
are
that I
close to their prime, are close
remember
to their
with the
prime.
that I remember doing well at this event and other playing qualities. So.
But yeah, they won't really be factors, I guess. Yeah, when it comes to all the withdrawals, only Djokovic is really like a big picture thing here, right? The other guys, either we were like really expecting or we knew that they were injured. Murray, Cazzo, McDonald's, stuff, Cilic. So Djokovic is kind of like the big deal here that he withdrew. I was a bit surprised by that. I mean, it really doesn't feel like a year so far for Djokovic where you can just sort of adjust your schedule and, play one event and then go into the slab. But we'll see. I mean, if he loses early in Rome, for example, maybe he picks up a wild card to Geneva or Lyon. He's done that before with Belgrade and then won the title. It's possible. But yeah, Sinner, I guess it's also pretty exciting to see because he actually doesn't have a good Madrid record, but I do think that's just like a little. Yeah, I mean, it's in the past. I think it's just the fact that he didn't play it in 2023 at all, and hasn't played it post puke, obviously. So I think the conditions in general actually do suit him. So, but it won't be easy for Carlos to win this event, even if he's fit.
Sinner, I remember him losing quite badly to Felix 2 years ago. But of
Yeah,
course, we can't read
that's
too
one
much
of
into
his
that.
two appearances only. And in 2021, Popirin took him out in the second round. But again, that's like 2 years ago already.
Yeah. Of course, we could also potentially get Alcaraz versus now. That I mean, that's too far away. But like, no, Nadal and Alcaraz would be a final.
No, that's too far away. That's too
That
far away. I mean, Nadal is
would bunch of
probably facing the Minor again. I mean, yeah.
rematch from Barcelona. We get that. But
I
yeah,
don't
no,
think.
in general, I think, this could be one of those tournaments where like you have some players like Nicolas Jarry or some of those sort of tier three type Roland Garros contenders that would just love a surface like this, where like their serve can do a lot of heavy lifting. It's not gonna be the case in the other play events, but that's why this is sort of very outlierish. It's kind of very indoor vibe, right? Like because of the stadium and the acoustics of it, it feels like a clay indoor event almost. It's like
Yeah.
75% indoors.
I compare it to Halle a lot of the time, that it's these both events that just kind of have like a semi-indoor vibe. Halle probably even more so, like you only really have this loft in the in the at the top of the roof. Madrid a little bit less so, but still, like I think this is mostly the reason why Zverev has been doing so well here. In 2023, as you said, I mean this was this event that was an outlier, and like you've got Zhang, Struff, Karatsev. But in 2022, for example, when I'm looking at it, like the results were very normal. It was all like all the quarterfinalists were among the top 12 seeds. So, it's not always like that. And we might as well get a breakdown like this. Doesn't feel like most of the seeds are that strong now, though. But we still have a few of these, like, yeah, big hitters like Alcaraz, Sinner, Ruud, Tsitsipas, Zverev again. And, well, any of them losing like relatively early will be some sort of a surprise, unless they're really tired in the case of Ruud and Tsitsipas, and unless Alcaraz even doesn't play, which, well, we just have to wait and see, of course. But if he does, I think the third round, yeah, might be a little bit of a problem. And we could even get Struff Alcaraz, the rematch for last year's final, in the fourth round here, which, given the Munich title and even a decent run in Monte Carlo, would be quite exciting. Last year, of course, Jan Lennard Struff was able to take a set in Madrid against Carlos Alcaraz as a lucky loser. It was a crazy story. He lost to Karatsev in the final qualies rounds, then he beat him in the semis to play Alcaraz and was actually relatively close to winning that title, which was crazy at the time. Finally, he's done that now. He's gonna turn 34 on Thursday, and maybe he has another Madrid run in him.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen people carry the momentum from Munich and taking over to Madrid and actually do pretty well in the past. So
Who?
maybe I'm thinking of Zverev. I feel
Yeah,
like that.
maybe Zverev won, I guess, both in
18.
2018, right?
Yeah, and Murray in 2015,
Murray in
right?
2015, yeah, when he won his first clay title, and then for like a year was pretty much the best clay player in the world, yeah. But Philipp Kohlschreiber probably never did that, I suppose.
No.
So I think he's won Munich a record 3 times. Rune last 2 years in Madrid, probably also not that much of a thing. I actually don't
So
remember
yeah,
how he
I
did, but
mean,
he lost to Davidovich Fokina 1 year, I think, but I don't remember the
yeah,
other.
last year Davidovich Fokina, they had that,
Yeah, very long match. Oh, actually, he didn't play in 2022. Okay, so that's why we don't remember.
yeah. I guess there's a lot of also like wild cards and IMG people playing this tournament.
Miami, it's essentially Miami.
Yes. Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, it'll be exciting for some players. Like, I'm thinking of like a Ben Shelton. Maybe he could go on a run. Maybe Medvedev already kind of in trouble with his second, third round. I don't know. It's going to be, I'd be surprised if it was very chalky, let's say, in the quarters. I think we're going to get a lot of upsets. Maybe not a lot, but maybe somewhere in between 2022 and 2023, just with the 2 week format. And I don't know, some of the top players right now, like, this is a big chance if you're like Tsitsipas, Ruud, to like carry that momentum. It feels like there's still some uncertainty with the tier one favorites going into Roland Garros a little bit.
It is a chance, but at the same time, like if Tsitsipas and Ruud lose early here, it won't really hamper their position like ahead of Roland Garros. Even I think if they lose early in Ro both Madrid and Rome, like I would still think of them as one of the, let's say, five, six favorites for Paris. It's just, you know, that's how well they've played so far, and sort of I would expect that in the best of five format with more time to prepare, with more focus on that big event, they'd probably still be fine. But if they are ready, then yeah, this format especially, I think, also allows the top players quite a lot of freedom in that, yeah, they get that day of rest, they get that start on Saturday, Friday. So it's not really like they are playing 1 more week now. It's kind of like they're starting maybe in the qualies here, like in terms of the schedule. Because if you finish your final on Friday, then you play on Saturday, for example. It's kind of like if you were in the qualies rather than playing 1 more week.
Nice. Are there any sort of early round matches that you're like really looking forward to in this draw? Maybe with some of the wild cards, João Fonseca, maybe?
Fonseca is always
Or
a
his matches getting a lot
box
of attention.
office, right? I mean, Fonseca is always box office, so kind of regardless who he plays, I think that's kind of the thing. If Mencik beats Huntsman, then that would maybe be one of the toughest tests that Dimitrov has faced in the first rounds recently. Of course, he's basically won at least 2 matches every single tournament that he's played this year, and that's been going on for a while, unless he got like Zverev early in 2023. So if Mencik plays him in the second round, like that potentially could be one of the toughest tests that he's faced in that time frame in the very first match, and maybe that's a semi-final record, or you know, the only Masters 1000 event that he doesn't have a semi-final at. Maybe that continues. You mentioned that like Medvedev can play Arnaldi in the second round. Obviously, that would be a big one. Mahatch Shelton as well. Like the winner of that, if Mahatch beats Rusev, like that would be someone who can really go deep here with the sort of draw that they have. Obviously, everyone will be watching Nadal too, right? I can't say I'm particularly excited for that match between him and Darwin Blanche. But well, anytime we get Rafa now, he's gonna get a lot of eyes on him. And there's also this pretty fabulous round one between Karatsev and Marozsán, you know? Karatsev, the
Yes, that's the one I
semi-finalist
was
from
just
last
gonna
year.
mention. There's a lot of good ones like that, yeah.
I don't
Karatsev,
know what
Marozsán.
Karatsev is gonna play, obviously. He hasn't been on the court since 3.5 months, something like that. So
Yeah.
who
If
knows?
we get
But
Jung versus Rude in the second round as well, you know, that'll be
yeah. That's the match that
good.
Casper says was the turning point for him last year, sort of in a change of
Right.
mindset, because he just knew he can't be running from corner to corner and just defending the entire time. So it is a good storyline if they play, absolutely.
Yeah, maybe this is a glimpse into the future. Maybe it's going to be a Mencik versus Fonseca fourth round.
Obviously, I would be up for it. That would be the match of the century if you ask me.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so it's, it should be kind of exciting. I mean, but yeah, maybe this is the year that, I don't know, Ego wins Madrid and Carlos wins Rome, and then
Could be.
everything feels.
Our predictions, by the way, looking a bit shaky at the moment. But I think we need to get give ourselves some slack, you know, because we weren't expecting, obviously, Carlos to withdraw from Monte Carlo and Barcelona.
Yeah,
We
there's no
had,
way we could have known that. So,
we had that. What did we say? 5 out of 9? I guess I think it was 5 out of 9 that we said that, like, out of the 9 clay events that Alcaraz and Świątek are gonna
finally.
play, that probably they're gonna win 5. And currently, we're still at 0 after just 3 appearances, which means that right now they have to be almost flawless, 5 out of 6. I still believe in that double Roland Garros dream. I still do. I
Yeah,
don't know.
one of the Olympics or the French Open, they're going to do the double. One
Okay.
of the two.
I
I think
think
so.
Roland Garros is more likely. So I still believe in this. I still have that hunch. I don't know, something about it just tells me, yeah, this will be a double Roland Garros this year. But of course, 5 out of 6, it's not looking that likely anymore. But yeah, we couldn't have known that Alcaraz will withdraw from both Monte Carlo and Barcelona. And I guess we were expecting at least one title there.
Yeah, so I think that'll about do it for this episode of Iga and Carlos Tennis Show. We'll be back after Madrid, so we'll do one in a couple of weeks. We'll look ahead to Rome. We'll have plenty of talk more talking points afterwards. Hopefully Alcaraz will get to play. Hopefully we'll see him healthy. Hopefully we'll see them both go deep. And yeah, any last parting thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, just what you said, I guess. We are recording this on Tuesday morning, and well, Tuesday morning my time at least, and we still don't know if he's gonna play. So that's kind of the main thing here. And with Iga, of course, we are expecting her to show up, are expecting her to be very strong. So hopefully next episode is not just yet again us talking about Iga's matches, Iga's performances, Iga's, you know, what she showed on the court, and with Alcaraz just kind of saying, well, what can we talk about, and start going about like the opponents and anything else. Like, hopefully next week is just both of them with a lot of quality action on the court and a lot of things for us to analyze.
Yeah, and hopefully everything we said will not be out of date tennis news, but if it is, you know, just know we tried your best to get this to you
Yeah,
fairly
if
quickly,
Alcaraz
so
withdrew before you guys listen to this, sorry.
yeah, sorry, we're trying our best here, but with that, yeah, keep on following us on Twitter. We try our best to put updates after every match now, and I think that's engagement has been good. And of course, you know, follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. So, cheers.